This is I Am Talking, an ongoing interview-based series by Information Architected in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Your host is Dan Kelsom, Chief Innovation Officer at Information Architected. You can find out more about the consulting, speaking, and workshop services provided by Information Architected around innovation management, social business design, content management, knowledge management, Enterprise 2.0, and enterprise search at informationarchitected.com. Ready to go? And now, onto the interview.
I am talking crowdfunding and storytelling, structure and creativity through cards. The topic today is crowdfunding, and this is part of a focus series of interviews. By the time this is published, it'll be the fourth or fifth interview on this topic. And I'm talking with people or companies, usually one to two person organizations who have chosen crowdfunding as a way to market, whether that is Kickstarter, the best known, Indiegogo, who's sort of the fast follower, or some that have run their campaigns totally independently. Today's guest is BJ West. He is a writer, filmmaker, and graphic artist, and has worked on some of the best-selling computer games of all time, including The Sims, SimCity 3000, The Sims Online, and The Sims 2, as well as some of the worst-selling games, which we may talk about this time, or we might actually peel off another interview and talk about games separately, because that's another topic that I'm very interested in. He was the editor of Fog City Nocturne, an anthology of original detective fiction, which sounds like a lot of fun, as well as contributing two novella-length stories to that book. He's written numerous screenplays, including his adaptation of Keone Chavez's short story, The Smiling Man, which he produced and directed as a short film in 2007, and he's the owner of Kelp Entertainment. So we'll be talking about his Kickstarter project, which was launched, I believe, was it early 2012 or was it late 2011?
It was early 2012.
Okay. And it's the StoryForge card deck, which you can still purchase because the Kickstarter campaign is done, if you go to storyforgecards.com. So with that, welcome, BJ. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I found you via your crowdfunded project, the StoryForge deck, and I have four of them now, I bought them so I could use them as giveaways, partly as tools that I could use myself, and partly to use in team exercises for work that I do. But before we get too carried away, what is the StoryForge project? I can tell people, but it's probably better for you to do that.
It's base form. StoryForge is a brainstorming deck of cards oriented for creating works of dramatic fiction. Mm-hmm. Basically, you lay cards out, they suggest things to you, get your brain going, and hopefully help you maximize drama in your story and conflict and make it more exciting.
Okay. You know, for me, I love card decks. That's part of what attracted me to your project is I have probably a dozen different card decks that are similar idea, but not the same focus. So Michael Mahalko's ThinkPack, I actually interviewed him several years ago about Thinker Toys. He's one of the oldest living creativity gurus, I think it's safe to say, an amazingly nice guy. I have IDEO's Method Cards, the Innovation Planner by Ideation International, Inventium, there's a bunch of them. I liked your very focused approach that targeted storytelling, because storytelling is sort of seeing a rebirth, at least I hope it is, because it's so powerful. So why did you create it, though? I mean, there are lots of other decks, there are plenty of books on storytelling, there's all sorts of courses that people could take from, you know, known Hollywood writers on how to be a fantastic story writer or screenwriter, right? So why create the deck, and what itch did it scratch for you or people that you thought might want it?
Well, I think where it started was, I'm, like you said, I'm a screenwriter myself, mm-hmm. though, you know, purely amateur, and novelist. So I've studied a lot of classes and books on screenwriting, and I found they're really great for when you know what you're doing, they will help you structure it. Mm-hmm. But they don't help you generate the initial ideas at all. And a lot of times you get writer's block, or you've got a good line on where you're wanting to take a story, but it needs more depth. You need, you know, more backstory, more detail, and you need help fleshing things out. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking that we needed something comparable to Legos. Stories are made out of discrete components that every story is made from, you know, characters, turning points, situations, archetypes. And I thought you could make something equivalent to a Lego set for stories.
Okay.
And then just play with it. It's the same abandon a kid plays with Legos.
Right. And maybe adults, too. You know, it's not too
well,
late.
Well, I mean, of course.
Actually, so one of the other interviews that I've done in this series was with the guys from E&M Labs and their Scallops project, which was another Kickstarter mm-hmm. project.
That's really cool. I've seen that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I'm distantly Danish is how I describe it. So several generations ago, Danish in one side. So Legos, anything relating to Legos always has my attention. Let's talk briefly about the crowdfunding side of this. Before you did this project, did you participate in any crowdfunding? Did you have any other projects of your own that you'd done? through crowdfunding?
I had participated in a couple. I think probably the first was Dice Candies. There were these guys making game-related multi-sided dice that were made out of chocolate and other candy. Huh. And so I kicked in there. But I'm fairly new to it. This is definitely my first project, though it won't be my last.
Okay, so why crowdfunding and why Kickstarter for StoryForge?
Well, mostly because I spent several years trying to get a traditional publisher interested in the deck.
Okay.
And they didn't really get it. I would tell them about it. I would send them mock-ups. And they didn't really see how well it worked, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think until you really start getting your hands messy with the cards and working with them to create stories, you don't really understand how powerful they are.
Well, that's their loss, isn't it?
I think so.
Part of the challenge of crowdfunding is there are crowds all over the place, but they don't necessarily know that you exist. They don't necessarily know that they would want a deck of cards for storytelling. So did you do anything to identify a crowd in advance? Did you pre-engage them?
Definitely.
Okay.
I started by creating a fairly extensive website with demo videos of me showing how the cards work, doing various types of exercises with them. Because when I tell people about the cards, they don't really get it. When I start laying the cards out, they see what's happening and they get engaged.
Okay.
So I started by having those examples available. And then I just spent every hour of every day for several months going to every website or BBS or Facebook page where people create stories and link to it and tried to get them to check it out.
So they were linking to the website that was outside of Kickstarter at that point?
Yes, at that point it was just the website.
Okay. Wow, okay. That's great to hear, because that's the fear that I was talking about before we hit record, that I see a lot of people that think that, you know, Kickstarter is some magic forum where suddenly money will rain from the sky and people will love them. It's more likely now because there is that much more activity. But it seems a really bad idea to not do what I say is pre-engagement work to identify if anybody really cares and if there is a market there. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I did a lot of research beforehand as I entered into this and found places and articles where people talked about successful Kickstarter campaigns and what made them work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did that as much as possible.
Okay. So how much, elapsed time, actual time, do you think you spent doing the pre-engagement work before you actually launched the campaign?
I'd say about 2 months.
Okay. So you had prototype cards? Did you have them manufactured, or you just printed them yourself, or how did that work?
A little of both. I did a preliminary run of 100 decks a couple years back under a different name and used them for playtesting and getting feedback from people.
Mm-hmm.
Once I actually had the design fleshed out and refined, I just started hand printing and cutting out cards on my inkjet printer, including a tuck box, and sending those to people.
That's an interesting challenges, in some ways, there are some very complex products that are being sold on Kickstarter. So especially there's a lot of robotics projects, the scallops guys, you need a laser cutter, which is, something, it's like $50,000 to buy one or something. So,
right.
But prototypes and giving people a sense of what they would potentially be buying as close as possible seems to be incredibly important.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. So now you had, we could look it up, but you had over 500 backers, I believe, and you raised somewhere more than $20,000 for the product, correct?
Yeah, I almost hit 22, I believe.
Okay. And that was about double the goal you'd set for the financial goal, right? So,
yeah, much to my surprise.
Right, yeah. So that's good news. So how did you set the original goal? Was that specifically tied to certain expenses, or was it just... Sounds like a good number.
It was purely based on the cost of getting a run of the deck printed. I was originally going to go for 2,000 decks.
Okay.
So I got estimates from various printers, finally chose one to work with, and had a set price on how much it would cost to have those decks printed.
Mm-hmm.
Shot for that. And when it went over double, I was able to increase that order to 5,000 decks.
Okay. So any sense as to what is it that helps you get pushed past that original goal and then almost double it?
The numbers really started climbing up when I got a few podcasts. People contacted me, people like you, that would say, hey, we think your project's interesting, would like to talk about it on our show.
Okay.
And as soon as they did, there was a spike.
Yep.
And that ended up leading to my first pre-release review of the cards on EM World magazine.
Oh, okay.
And that exploded.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry I didn't reach out earlier. Next time, let me know. Next time.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, that's good. And they reach out to you, or did you specifically hunt down any of the podcast interviews you got?
They sought me out.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. Let's talk about the process of creating the deck then. Yeah, so you talked about, you know, you had a prototype done before, you did some on your own, and you did a lot of pre-work to do. I think you did a nice job on the videos too. It was sort of a show.
Thanks.
Rather than there's some very half-hearted attempts from many other projects that I've seen. The most interesting, I mean, there's lots of things we could talk about, you know, manufacturing. I know you had some problems with sourcing and typos and things like that. But from the cards themselves, I haven't actually counted them, but you know, according to the box in the description, it says there's 88 cards and 5 suits. So how did you come up with the cards and the suits? Because, you know, some of the work that I do is around taxonomies and ontologies and labels that people put typically on enterprise content. Right. And it's that's tricky business, right? So how did you come up with this?
I was developing the card system itself for the better part of 10 years. And it all started kind of on a tangent, looking at tarot decks.
Okay.
I read a book by a man named Italo Calvino called The Castle of Crossed Destinies. In that book, he refers to the tarot as a story-generating machine.
Ah.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. I was familiar with tarot, but I mostly, at that point, thought of it as collections of art. You know, little packages of tiny paintings.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm not a big tarot practitioner. Mm-hmm. I just like the graphic design aspect of it.
Okay.
So I started thinking about that and looking at the symbology of tarot, and the varying decks have different meanings for each. So I broke down the definitions from at least 100 different tarot decks and kind of synthesized from them what elements of drama were kind of pointed to in each deck.
Okay.
And I approached that from the other side by also saying, okay, what are some classic archetypes in dramatic fiction? Things like Seven Deadly Sins, Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, and breaking them down into, you know, here is the meaning I want, which card reflects that best? Just over the process of several years, distilled it all down into this giant grid on paper of meanings and themes and dramatic forms that worked as into a deck of cards.
Okay. What was the top number of total concepts you had before you winnowed it down to 88?
I started with the basic 78 cards of a tarot deck.
Okay.
And tried not to go above that. Because at first it was the original title for this was The Writer's Tarot.
Oh, okay.
So I abandoned that very quickly when I started trying to test market it. I found it had very bad connotations for a lot of people.
I could see that.
Even though I'm not trying to, you know, use these for cardomancy per se.
Right.
So yeah, I tried to stick with that grid. I ended up bumping it to the 88 cards by making 2 blank cards for each suit.
Oh, so okay.
Can make their own cards.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I have not counted the deck, so. Okay.
If you get anything other than 88, let me know.
Okay. All right. Any favorite concepts that did not make the cut for the final 78 printed cards?
Not really.
Really?
Okay. Not, it's an incredibly versatile system. There's some topics aren't addressed as specifically as they might be, but there are cards that can be interpreted to hit almost anything.
Right.
It's a pretty soft associative system. A lot of the brainstorming card sets that are out there are really specific. You know, something means a soldier, means a house, a hammer. And when you have really specific concepts like that, they lock in really quick and can't be anything else.
Right.
I tried to keep everything more suggestive.
Right.
So that, you know, when you are shown a card with a concept on it, your mind just automatically tailors it to the context of whatever story you're working on.
Right. No, I like that. And it's, you know, so that's, what is that, associative thinking, lateral thinking, sort of nudges you in the right direction?
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
I was also inspired by Brian Eno's Divergent Strategies deck.
Yes, right. Yeah, actually, I finally saw that, last year, I guess. Which is funny because I am a musician, so I should have seen it earlier.
I'd known about it for years, but it was impossible to find, and they finally re-released it.
Right. It's Oblique Strategies, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
A $10 word. Let's talk about storytelling a little bit. You know, I think most people don't particularly consider themselves to be storytellers, especially in the corporate world. And that's part of what I want to bring up, is there's such power in storytelling. Are you familiar at all with Nancy Duarte and her book Resonate that came out in the last couple of years?
I'm afraid I'm not.
Okay. She comes from a presentation background, so she creates lots of compelling presentations, pitches for companies, unlike a lot of other branding and design companies. And Resonate, I was talking with a design and innovation partner that I'm working with as part of a relaunch of an online learning community and platform that I have. And he happened to mention it, and I realized I had bought the book, and like many things, I hadn't fully devoured it yet. So I fired it up last night, and it's actually an ebook version on the iPad. In that book, she's very specifically talking about storytelling. She uses the hero's journey as a way to create a compelling narrative, so it's not just a flat story.
Right.
There's peaks and valleys. And she has, the iPad version uses like examples of, let's listen to Martin Luther King and show exactly where he shows the past versus the future, the dream versus the old dream versus the new dream, where we're at with respect to the dream, especially. Yeah, I mean, you have much more direct experience in storytelling than most people that I'm likely to run into, especially on the game side, which I hope we'll get to either in this interview or at least another time. What makes a story engaging?
That's a big question. A lot of it's purely that they let you be somebody that you aren't. They let you experience worlds you will never see in real life and let you feel like you've participated in something more epic and deeply meaningful than the mundane world provides.
Mm-hmm. I think great marketers, great salespeople, great CEOs, potentially. So Steve Jobs, for all his other foibles, had a great vision and steered people in that direction, and certainly the ad agency behind Apple that helped support it. My experience, it seems like in corporate life, when people are trying to go through change management, whether it's from a merger acquisition scenario or just the reality that the company needs to change due to the economy, competition, whatever it happens to be, that stories aren't usually what's used. They tend to take more of a just the facts kind of approach.
Right.
Do you have any...
I think you see the stories a lot in the marketing side of things.
True. Yes.
Less than the management.
Right. Do you have any examples, or can you think of any, whether it's people who have bought the deck or anecdotally people you've talked to who have used storytelling more in a sort of corporate setting?
I know of at least one company that has bought a large number of the decks for use in some kind of team building exercise, but I don't know a lot of the specifics.
Okay. If we were to brainstorm on how we would use it, because it's one of the reasons I bought multiple copies of the deck is to be able to use it in team situations. I can't say that I have any magic formula just yet on how to use it in a team setting. Any guidance on, I know that you designed the deck to be sort of suggestive but open-ended for many scenarios. If you were to think of, let's say that we need to tell the story of a company needs to reinvent itself from where it was 10 years ago to where it should be in 5 years, is there any particular pattern that you might talk about, whether it's the hero's journey or any of those layouts?
Well, the hero's journey, there is a hero's journey layout, so you could definitely adapt it that way. It's also really open to social play. I know a lot of people who use it as a party game.
Okay.
So if you were just trying to get a group of people to work with each other better, be more cooperative and imaginative, the social play is really good because you can give everybody a card and then in turn they put it down, begin a story, and then the next person has to add to that story cued by whatever card they've been drawn.
Okay.
Or been dealt, rather.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that might be the team-building exercise that they were using at the other event.
Yep. I think between the two of us, we're going to need to dig up to see who else is using this for similar situations, because I think it's a really untapped area, and I would love to stir more up in that area. So let's see what we can do on that. Let's jump back into the crowdfunding side. So you already mentioned that, so if you were going to do a new project, you would likely use crowdfunding. What would you do differently? Because you had, by all accounts, it seems like you had a pretty successful run. What are smarter things you would do to make it easier or shorten the time frame or raise more money or whatever?
I definitely wouldn't have shortened the time frame. If I had gone, I think Kickstarter lets you do either a 30-day or a 60-day campaign.
Mm-hmm.
If I had chosen the 30, it would have failed. I would not have made it.
Okay.
I was close. but not over the line. So it would have been canceled out. I would have not received the funding. So having the longer time frame gave me that extra time to keep pushing online and spreading the word. That was enough time for the fire to catch.
Right.
As it were.
For any projects you're thinking of in the future, do you think they'd be suitable for the crowd that you had already attracted?
There's bound to be some overlap. My next project is going to be a documentary film about my tenure at Atari Corporation.
Okay.
I was one of the last people let go as they went out of business.
Okay.
And a lot of the people who bought StoryForge are role-playing gamers who are very responsive to its use as a character generator.
Okay.
So there's definitely going to be some audience overlap.
Otherwise, any other things that you would do differently to light the fuse faster, make it burn faster?
I hope so. But a lot of it's just going to be identifying where my potential audience is and how best to reach them. When I first started with StoryForge, I basically just Google searched like crazy for the kinds of things that I thought the people who would enjoy StoryForge like and where they talk about those things socially.
Okay.
And then tried to inject myself into that conversation. So I'll be doing a lot more of that.
Okay. Is there any specific tools that you're using to track the activity that you're doing?
Just Google, mostly.
Okay. You know, keeping spreadsheets or anything around, you know, who you contacted or who was receptive or places to stay away from?
Just making notes, mostly. I'm a pretty non-linear thinker a lot of the time, so it wasn't a real organized effort, shall we say.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious, because it seems like there could be opportunities for, you know, web services, web apps, things like that, that could help to organize a Kickstarter.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it might be a business.
And if there aren't yet, there will be soon, I guarantee it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a giant wave that I think has only just begun.
Well, it's such a revolution. I mean, for, you know, most of the 20th century, there was one business model that worked for artists. Do what somebody is paying you to do.
Right.
When you wanted to do your own thing, you had to get lucky.
Right.
Or, you know, get noticed by a patron who was willing to support you until you could build a market. If you wanted to do something small or something esoteric, you were just, you know, you could fund it yourself and hope you could sell what you make. But other than that, you were out of luck.
Right.
Now there's a way you can actually get the funding in advance to build something, however small or large the appeal might be.
Right. Well, so how about for fans, you know, the funders themselves? Any advice on what they can do to help for people that have projects?
Oh, yeah. It's all about spreading the word. That was a huge part of why I think I succeeded so much, was the people that got excited about it, got really excited about it and blogged about it and posted about it on Facebook and helped get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And that builds exponentially.
Okay. Do you think part of that was because of the, you know, the 2 months or so of pre-work that you did and building attention?
That certainly primed the pump.
Okay.
You know, that was how I got people to check out the Kickstarter in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Once people started signing up and talking about it, it definitely expanded much more quickly.
Right. Yeah, so I'm sort of obsessed about, I call it an engagement life cycle, and I think it's wisest to do pre-engagements, you know, identify the people you think would be interested, hang out where they hang out.
Right.
Talk to them, and not try to push anything on them. It's partly to find out, should you bother doing anything?
That's a difficult line to walk. I found a lot of forums where, because I was essentially trying to sell something, I was just plain not allowed to talk about it.
Yep.
And others that were more open to it because they saw that it did, in fact, fit in with what they were talking about. And also there was a lot of resistance at first because there's the uncertainty. You know, if I get involved in this, is it actually going to happen?
Right.
The closer I got to my goal, the more people started seeing, oh, yeah, this is going to happen, and started kicking in.
Yep. Right. So that's the herding behavior of peers.
Yep.
Pile on. Yeah. And that's part of why I try to provide advice to people, whether it's, you know, projects like yours or internal projects where you're trying to build momentum around, let's take our company in a different direction, or we need to create some new product or whatever it happens to be. Not everybody wants to be the first one out of the gate.
Right.
To potentially fall into a deep, dark pit. I don't know if that's one of the cards. I don't remember. There's safety in numbers. So until we get a certain threshold where it seems like, oh, it is safe enough now to raise my hand to say, yes, I'm interested, or contribute money or whatever it happens to be,
Right.
You have to go through that, and it might be painful. It might take a little bit of time, and there's not necessarily any magic on how you find those people necessarily.
There's also just the whole thing that before I hit my goal, mm-hmm. it's speculative.
Right.
Once I hit the goal, they're simply making a sale. You know, they're just purchasing the deck. Yes. It became a real straightforward transaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you know, we could probably take a look through the comments because they would still be on there. Did enthusiasm, like public comments, wane once you passed the threshold, and it was more transactional? Or
no, it kept building.
Okay.
More and more people started expressing their excitement.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Very interesting. All right. Well, we're about out of time. Any parting advice on people who might be interested in storytelling or that are wondering if they should try crowdfunding? Either one works for me.
I'm a huge fan of the crowdfunding now. The beauty of it is the way Kickstarter works is if the demand actually isn't there, mm-hmm. your campaign fails and you're not out anything. There's really no reason not to go for it.
Okay. There's some stalled Kickstarter projects. I did contribute to the Pebble, partly because I wanted to see what would happen. And boy, they're having some interesting times there. I'm hoping eventually someday I will see a Pebble watch on my wrist at some point. But that's interesting. Okay, great. Well, so let's wrap up. You know, I'm glad we finally had a chance to talk today. It's been months in the making, although you didn't know that, but now you do.
Well, we've both been busy.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to circle back with you at some point and hear more about the story of your Atari days and all your gaming background, because that is, you know, as we were talking offline, gamification, you know, aspects of game design that apply to marketing or sales or employee behavior, things like that. I think it's very interesting. I'm very interested in talking to people who do real games and what we can pull from that, because that's one of the fears I hear from game designers is that there are people who have no idea what they're doing are stepping into trying to do game things in the real world, and that scares them.
Yeah, I think you're going to find my next project really interesting. It's right up your alley.
Okay, great. Well, we'll definitely have to stay in touch on that. And for everybody who's been listening, I think it's well worth taking a look at the StoryForge deck and certainly the examples where BJ goes through, you know, what's it about, what do the cards look like, how might you use them. And I do think that storytelling has a huge role that we have not really given much attention to, particularly in turbulent times where we really need to diffuse people's fear and sort of inspire them to do different things, whether you're in human resources or you're a new CEO or you have a startup or you're trying to launch a political movement. We are actually recording this on Election Day. You know, there's a lot that can be done around storytelling, and not just for, you know, film and music and games and books and, you know, it's sort of the traditional entertainment world. So I think it's well worth taking a look. If anybody hasn't bought a deck yet, you can go to storyforgecards.com. And that's about it. Thanks again, BJ.
My pleasure.
Okay.
You've been listening to I Am Talking, an ongoing interview-based series by Information Architected in Cambridge, Massachusetts, hosted by Dan Kilsen, Chief Innovation Officer at Information Architected. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this interview. And if the topics discussed today are of interest to you, please comment on this post at informationarchitected.com. Contact us at info@informationarchitected.com or call toll-free at 855-GO-INNOVATE. That's 855-464-6668. And we can discuss the ways our consulting, speaking, and workshop services can help you and your team in your business. Till next time, what is your information architected for?